You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Dr. Mary Rosich, a tech startup founder, CEO, and co-founder of an organization doing incredible things to empower female entrepreneurs. She's an absolutely incredible woman, so we are so honored to have her on our program today. Mary, how are you doing?
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you today.
Of course. And just for our listeners, do you mind telling them where you're coming from? Because it's nighttime where we're recording and it's the daytime where you are. So where are you coming from at this moment?
Yes, I'm in Tokyo now.
Awesome.
In Japan.
Great. So Mary, just to start off to get some more background information on you, I'd like to know if you could describe your impression on first entering the tech startup field.
Well, that's a really big question. Yes, I started my career in the corporate space, initially working for internet companies. So I learned my way up through marketing, product, technology, and business. And then after a while, I went back to a corporate role in payments for working for American Express for 8 years. When I decided to jump from a very solid career in the corporate world into entrepreneurship, it was for a number of different reasons. And everybody has their own different reason. So for me, it was that I had been living in Asia for 5 years, and my role moved to New York, and I decided I wanted to stay in Asia at that time with my family. I just had my second child. So I had this idea of connecting families through long-distance technologies, making it more fun for video calls, and I thought it was a great time for me to launch a startup. So for me, the decision of going into entrepreneurship was about timing and also having saved enough to sustain myself and launch the business on my own. So I think everybody has very different reasons to launch into entrepreneurship. And for me, it was a matter of timing, having a good idea, and having the funding to launch it.
Excellent. Now, if you could explain what the tech startup environment is like in Singapore. This is where you started your startups. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I think the startup environment globally is a very exciting industry to be in. In Singapore, for the past 5 years, it's been growing very, very aggressively. It's been a very, very exciting period. I've visited lots of entrepreneurship spaces, both in the US, in Europe, in Asia. And there are lots of very exciting places to launch businesses. Singapore is particularly exciting because it's a country where it's extremely easy to set up a business, to build a team, to find funding. And because it's a very small country with a 5.5 million population, it's a very, very new country. It's just celebrating its 50th anniversary as an independent country. And to me, it's the future of how most of the world will be in probably 100 years. Everything works. It's well organized. The government is very smart setting up policies to enable entrepreneurship. And it's been a very, very good experience.
Amazing. Now, you've had experiences living and working in many countries in your lifetime. So what did you learn from these experiences abroad in different areas of the world? And how are you able to take back those experiences with you and then apply it to your business?
Yeah, I think this is absolutely critical. So for anyone who's listening, if you ever have the opportunity to live abroad, to study abroad, work abroad, just take it, because it's going to open yourself to an incredible amount of experiences that will change you forever. I remember I'm originally from Barcelona in Spain, and I was working with a friend who once told me, "Oh, I'd love to go and work in New York." And I thought, "Wow, I never thought about working outside of Barcelona. I was very comfortable there. I loved it." But I thought, "Wow, this is something completely new to me." And I told another friend, "Hey, you know what? You know, I'd love to work in New York one day." Well, guess what? 6 months later, he gave me the opportunity to work for him in New York. So he sent me there. He had just sold his company to a large public internet company based in New York. And suddenly I had the opportunity. So sometimes you have to put it out there. You have to tell people, and the dreams can actually come through. Then from New York, I had the chance to go to London. I got a grant for to join an MBA at London Business School. And it was also very interesting because I heard, I got a copy of The Economist on a Saturday morning, and they were advertising the London Business School MBA. And I thought, wow, this would be really exciting. I applied the next day and I went through admissions. And 2 weeks later, they sent me a letter saying, "Now it's time for you to pay your first year fees." And I was...
Wow.
I was in complete shock because obviously I hadn't done my full homework. At the time, it was not that well known, the fees of MBA schools, of the top MBA schools. So I applied for a grant, and I got it. I got a grant from a Spanish bank and the British Council, and I was able to go to London and complete my MBA. And
wow.
So sometimes people ask me, "Oh, you've probably done a lot of very heavy planning around your career." I say, "No, you just have to sometimes follow your impulse. Some things require years of preparation, but others just require you to be able to say yes and take a risk, and then you'll find a way through the challenges that come later on."
What an amazing background and all the experiences that you've been able to have with that. I'd like to remind our listeners that if you are listening to our show right now, you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Mary Rosich, and we're talking about her background as a tech startup entrepreneur. Now, Mary, what is it like to be a woman in tech, and specifically a tech startup, an entrepreneur in that field?
I think it's like everything in life, nothing is easy, nothing is completely straightforward. But sometimes certain industries expect things to be in a certain way. So it's not rare that you'd expect the CEO of a startup to be a man. And sometimes you go to the meetings and people think that they're going to meet somebody completely different. Mm-hmm. This happens because we use pattern recognition, and with entrepreneurship and with the startups, most CEOs are typically men from, you know, computer science backgrounds, but this is starting to change. The fact that there are more and more women getting into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math careers, gives more opportunities to all of us. And this is one of the things that it's very close to my heart. I've always been involved with nonprofits and charity work around gender equality. And mm-hmm. as much as I can, I always try to bring a gender lenses to everything that we do, whether we are organizing a conference, we make sure that we invite enough highly qualified women as speakers. If we have a task force, you try to make sure that there's a wide diversity or pool of talent invited to the table, and also make sure that that women in the team know that that they are treated with as much equality as any role requires. One of the interesting things that I've done recently is the launch of Female Founders, which is a new independent nonprofit a non-governmental organization, which is dedicated to supporting gender equality in entrepreneurship and leadership. We focus on research, policy, and advocacy. And our goal is to bring in more women into the tech space.
Right. And, you know, you're doing so much great work to help empower female entrepreneurs and to help feel women or help women feel like they are, you know, a bigger part of the tech industry. And that's so important. When we come back from our first break, we're going to talk more about these topics. But remember, we do want our listeners to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter. Be sure to use the hashtags womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, and hashtag weforshe. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, joined by our guest today, Mary Rosich, who again is a tech startup founder, CEO, and co-founder of an organization doing incredible things to empower female entrepreneurs. Before we went to our first break, we talked about Mary's background in the tech startup environment, as well as an entrepreneur. And now we're going to shift the discussion more to talking about women in STEM. Now, Mary, many people know that there tends to be a minority of women in this field. So how can we ensure that females will no longer comprise a minority of those in STEM careers in the future?
Hi, Michelle. Yes, this is such an interesting topic. Ensuring that there's enough equality at the top in technology, it's not an easy, it's not a problem with an easy solution. I think we can all do our little bit to make sure that equality reaches higher numbers in the next decade. I'm supporting a number of different initiatives, for example, and in every project that I do, I try to make sure that we invite enough women entrepreneurs, that we have a diverse and wide panel in conferences, for example, or that we have that we are inviting enough women to the table. One of the interesting things happening, for example, in Singapore, is through the UN Women Singapore Committee. I was invited to be ambassador for their Girls to Pioneers program. They have done a wonderful job engaging girls and women to consider careers in STEM, in science, technology, engineering, and math. So they organize, for example, day camps where girls 10 to 15 year old can participate in these STEM day camps. They organize field trips and also mentoring to nurture the next generation of innovators. It's been a very interesting program, and I hope to see it roll out in more countries.
So how are the girls transformed after their experiences in these camps?
One of the most important things that we can do is, so first of all, research is very important. We need to understand where the problem is. But that changes across cultures, across countries, different religions, even family backgrounds will have many different reasons why they make certain choices. Mm-hmm. We know that girls start to fall down the technology path at the age of 9. So that this is the age where they don't see themselves as technologists. If you go into a classroom and ask girls to draw an engineer, they will most likely draw a man, not a woman. Mm-hmm. And right. One of the things that we feel that can help change this tell this myth is through role modeling. So some of the interesting things that we are trying to do is bringing in more women engineers, women mathematicians in front of girls at this age, so they can see this, that it's absolutely fine and possible to have a career in STEM. And it's for them to see themselves making this career choice at this very early stage.
Love it. So what is the importance of encouraging young girls to have as much education in the area of STEM as possible? As we know, to have such great math classes and science classes, and these introductory classes in school is so important, right?
Yes, it's important. But if you look at the world of education today, it's changing very, very quickly. If you look at pure knowledge, all the knowledge in the world is basically online right now. You can go online and take free courses on any subject in some of the top universities in the world. So access is there, and it's there for everyone. Now, it's not so much about access anymore. It's about making it more engaging as well for women. Sometimes women feel that they want to enter careers where they see meaning, where they see that they are changing lives. And we see this a lot with the millennials, new generations coming up. They want to make sure that they see the impact of their world, of their work. So maybe they don't feel it's as appealing to sit in front of a database for hours every day. But if they understand that what they're doing is maybe data mining to identify and to solve global problems with those technical skills, they can see it in a different light and make these career choices early on in life and see themselves as ambassadors for change.
Terrific. So if you could tell us, what advice do you have for young girls that are interested in pursuing careers in STEM? What's something that you wish that you would have heard when you were a young girl trying to pursue this field?
I think that's a great question. What I'd like girls to know is that there's nothing which is only for girls or only for boys. Anything, it's technically gender neutral. There is nothing that a man or a woman can do better just because of their sex. It's just an absurd notion that we have grown up with. And there's a lot of research that is now dispelling those myths. Both men and women can be equally focused, equally smart, equally creative, and we hope that that they see themselves in technical careers and in leadership careers as much as their counterparts.
Wonderful. Great advice there. If you're just now tuning into our show, you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We are talking with our guest today, Mary Rosich, and we're now going to talk about one of the tech startups that Mary founded, App Strategy Labs. So, Mary, what motivated you to start App Strategy Labs?
So, App Strategy Labs is a niche consulting firm. It's a boutique marketing consultancy firm. Which is helping brands, especially publishers, develop insights and data-driven digital marketing strategies. I realized that that there's a lot of marketing has become a very technical area. And if you look at the traditional roles that that we had around the internet, now they are all extremely data-driven. They are very, very, very specialized. So you usually work with people, agencies, specialists who have become extremely, extremely expert on some very, very narrow, very, very vertical areas, such as customer acquisition at a specific channel, such as email marketing, for example. But if you ask them to develop a wider strategy for a product, they will not be able to consider all the challenges, so they cannot have a generalist approach. I created App Strategy Labs to help firms look at the wider spectrum of strategy around mobile marketing, but also from a very, very specialized point of view, having been myself both on the corporate side and on the startup side, publishing apps and understanding the technology very deeply on the vertical side.
Mm-hmm. So how is it the advancement in mobile technology, changing the way that we build relationships and interacting with each other?
So there's a lot of new technologies that have changed the way that we interact. If you look at, obviously, we are now having an interview via Skype. Skype has been out there for a long time, and it's a staple of communications. There's probably 20 to 50 excellent video calling free tools out there, which are excellent, and that has changed the way that it has completely reshaped the world of telecommunications in terms of how we use data instead of voice to communicate. When you look at human relationships, you can see how there's a lot more mobility in terms of how families are distributed. Not only people who are moving away from their hometowns for work, but also people who get displaced because of war, because of natural disasters, or lots of many different reasons. We live apart more than ever now than before. So the reason for Quality Time Lab was to try to use technology to connect people, to build these relationships in the long distance, to make it more
Perfect.
interesting and more attractive, especially for grandparents and kids, to spend more time together.
Excellent. And when we come back from our next break, we're going to talk more about Quality Time Lab. So don't go anywhere. Remember to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, but you be sure to use the hashtags #WomenInvest, #GirlsInvest, and #MeForShe. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Mary Rosich, who is a tech startup founder, CEO, and co-founder of an organization doing incredible things to empower female entrepreneurs. Before we went to this break, we talked about Mary's work with women in STEM, and we gave an introduction to one of the tech startups that she founded called App Strategy Labs. Now, Mary, there is an app and a new tech startup that you helped to create as that you created yourself as well, called Quality Time Labs. And we briefly went over it before we went to our break, but I'd like to go back to talking about that app. First of all, if you could tell us how competitive is the app industry?
Hi, Michelle. Yes, the app industry is extremely competitive. We have seen in the past years how in 2011 it was not that hard to publish an app and get it up in the rankings and get a few million downloads. By now, in 2015, it's extremely competitive, and in fact, only 11 companies are taking most of the profits in the app stores, which proves that it has become a more consolidated market, a more competitive and more professionalized market as well.
Wow, I didn't know that. So only 11 companies have, the majority of the market share of the app industry. That is pretty staggering.
Yes, it is.
So, talking about Quality Time Labs, what inspired you to create this app?
I was inspired to create this app because I had just had my first baby, and I was living very far from my family. There was a time difference, and I felt that just the Skyping was not a good enough experience. Kids get bored very quickly when they video call. They see the face of the person on the screen, but that's not very engaging to them. So they typically run away after 10 seconds, and the grandparents get very frustrated. I felt there has to be a way to make it more exciting, more interesting, and a better bonding experience for grandparents who find themselves very far away from their families and the grandkids. So I started thinking, how do we do this in real life? We don't just stare at each other's faces. We usually will have a book in front of us. We'll do an activity together. We could be drawing or playing chess, playing tic-tac-toe. We basically engage props, we engage games and content. So I thought, what if we could put all these engaging activities next to the video call? And this has been the origin and basically the ethos of Quality Time Lab, which is basically a company that creates tools to connect families.
You know, what I think is so special about this is that more and more often it seems that both moms and dads are, you know, working parents and sometimes aren't able to be with their kids 24/7, to be together as a family all the time. So this is such a great way for kids to spend time with those that they love.
Absolutely. And I think what's interesting is after being in the internet world and knowing about product and design and technology, I had been in the corporate world for a while. But when I realized I had the problem, I immediately realized that I had the tools to solve that problem. And I think this is the message that I always try to convey to young girls. You will go through life identifying problems that maybe nobody else has paid attention to. Maybe nobody else realized that the problems were there. If you find something that you think you can solve and you think that solves a big enough problem, then you have a business. And this is the whole process of finding a good idea. If you find a problem you pay for to get solved, that is a business. Everything else is just a hobby. And we need to understand the difference between one or the other, because sometimes we get drugged into things and we don't realize that they are very good hobbies, absolutely entertaining, and we love them. But unless we find a way to extract business value out of them, it's incredibly hard to build a business just on personal fun. You have to make it work for somebody else so they are willing to pay. Even if it's just a few dollars, you can scale it and make it a very big business.
Right. I think that's a really important point. We talk a lot to entrepreneurs and we talk about the importance of making sure that whatever business you want to start, that it comes out of your passion. It's something, you know, that you live, breathe, and eat 24/7. But like you mentioned, it's also vital that it's an idea that's scalable and can be made into a business concept. So I think that's some very important information to know. Like you said, for young girls that want to start a business, but you know, for any entrepreneur that might be thinking that they want to start to create a startup, to understand the difference, like you said, between a hobby and a startup idea.
Yes. So and to this point, we hear a lot about follow your passion. I hear there's a meme going out always on my timelines, follow your passion and money will come later. Well, I tend to disagree with that because guess what? Maybe you love cupcakes, and I have a great example on that. I was absolutely in love with candy buffets, just setting up the decoration, picking the theme, the color, setting the whole thing. I thought, wow, maybe I can make a business out of this. I'm so passionate about decoration and the art of setting up candy buffets. But guess what? I realized that it was actually a hobby, not so much a business. Because in order to have a business, you need a market and the product and the service. And I realized that setting up this kind of business, you really need a large team. You need to work weekends, nights. You need to be at events. And it was not the kind of thing that I really wanted to do. So it's good to have a little test and see whether passion is really passion or is just something that you can do as a hobby. I think we get confused a lot between passion and expertise. When you get really good at something, you are passionate about that. You become passionate about that. I think passion comes actually a little bit later.
Very interesting. Now, part of the startup, part of the process of having a successful business is often trying to seek funding. So what route did you take to receive funding to create the app of Quality Time Labs?
So I made a very unusual choice, actually. So my experience is a little bit different to the standard entrepreneur approach. I launched the app first with my own savings. I developed the software. I registered for a startup conference, and I was selected for a demo I launched a demo, and I got a big stack of VCs, business cards, who wanted to talk to me right after the event. And then I spent the next 3 months talking and having lots of meetings. Well, we got 2 offers, but I didn't like those offers. I wasn't comfortable with the valuation. I wasn't comfortable with the outlook of teams and their values and their approach. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, look, maybe there's another way of doing this. I tried a little bit of crowdfunding. The platforms that I used for crowdfunding were still starting. It was actually one of the launch products, so there wasn't a lot of volume. And then I realized, look, I can actually fund it on my own. So I decided to bootstrap. And Quality Time Lab, to this date, has never taken funding, not even grants or any kind of support. And it's been bootstrapped, and it's working quite well.
Very interesting. So to that point, I'm sure it's very important for entrepreneurs to know that it is a good idea to save up before you begin your startup journey. Now, before we wrap up this little section up, if you can explain where to find this app.
Yes, you can find it on qualitytimelab.com, and you'll see there the links for iOS and Android. And you can download the apps. There's a free version, both for iOS and Android, that you can use to play. And if you want to video call or video call without ads, you can just pay a few dollars for the full version.
Excellent. So we encourage our listeners to check that out. It sounds like, you know, such an amazing app, especially if you do have kids that aren't with you all the time, if you're a working parent or if you're in another city. It's such an innovative idea. Now, we are going to go to another break, but remember, we do want you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter. Be sure to use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #weforshe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are talking with our guest today, Mary Rosich, a tech startup founder, CEO, and co-founder of an amazing organization to help empower female entrepreneurs. And that is where our topic, the topic that we are going to focus on now. So Mary, talking about female founders, what was the motivation behind the creation of Female Founders?
Thank you very much, Michelle. Such a pleasure being here. So Female Founders, the reason why we started was, it's actually interesting. I'm the co-founder of Female Founders together with Roshni Matani, who is an amazing entrepreneur and the founder of The Asian Parent, a large publisher in Southeast Asia and growing across the whole of Asia. So We kept bumping into each other at tech startup events, and most of the time we were the only women in the conference or the only women in the room.
Right.
After a while, we started talking about the challenge of how women entrepreneurs create businesses that are a little bit different, how we wanted to help each other, and how we felt that that it's not good enough that women represent only 5% of startups where we are. If you look at Silicon Valley, women typically represent up to 10% of startups. If you look at the boards, women in boards are only 22%, and that is the same around for leadership positions. And depending on the industry, it gets lower and lower. We thought, how if we could help improve gender equality in technology and leadership by increasing female-led organizations from the different, 5, 10, 8%, depending on the country or the industry where you look, what if we could reach 20% by 2020? And by giving it a very measurable percentage and a set, a 5 years timeline to achieve that, suddenly we had the vision of putting a team together and working towards different things that we could do, initiatives around research, policy, and advocacy to help bring these to the 20% by 2020.
Now, what you just mentioned is, I think, is very important. We talk about the global gender gap in women entrepreneurship and with women having board positions all around the world, but to have less than 10%, that is profound. And it is really that low in Singapore. That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, the number of women in boards in Singapore is 22%, and I believe that's actually much better than many other countries. Still, it's quite low.
Right.
It's been a very hot year for this topic, especially in Silicon Valley and when you look at the technology industry. Last year, there was a lot of debate around women in games. We've seen a lot of articles in favor and against. What's important is that there's a conversation about it. But even though there's a conversation, we still don't have the facts, the correct facts at hand. There are some entrepreneurship global monitors. There's a lot of research around public companies, but not so much around entrepreneurship. So we want to partner with large organizations, develop research, expert field analysis, and bring the numbers that allow us to create specific policies, practical and imaginative policy prescriptions that can help organizations, governments, and different industries, everybody at all levels, look at best practices and see how they are doing. And then also work around advocacy, effective, high-level advocacy, working with governments, with organizations, helping them improve the numbers.
Wonderful. Now, when we're talking about, this organization, it's relatively new, correct? When was this organization founded? When was it started?
The organization was launched in June this year. It was registered a little bit before, but we basically had the launch event in June this year, 2015.
So what was the inaugural event like? Was it what was going through your mind when this first event occurred?
It was wonderful. We hosted the event at INSEAD, which is one of the top business schools in the world. They had a very large campus in Singapore, and we had about 200 people registered to attend. It was by invitation only, and we had panel discussions. Conversations with both VCs, entrepreneurs, and people across the industry. So we're looking at bringing in, just opening the conversation to the different pillars around the entrepreneurship space, both the education, the VCs and funding space, the enablers such as working spaces, accelerators, incubators, the entrepreneurs themselves, and all the government enablers that bring the ecosystem together. And we had an incredibly overwhelmingly positive response, and it's been very exciting since, so much so that we are expanding it to more countries in Asia very quickly. And we are looking actually for partners across the world to develop female founders chapters in each of the different countries. We are looking, our focus is not so much on networking events or on education. The focus of female founders is around developing research, policy, and advocacy. So in this sense, we are more focused as an independent, non-profit, non-governmental organization, focused on supporting gender equality in entrepreneurship and leadership.
Great. Now, female founders as an organization, do you strictly have a females-only membership, or are there men involved in this too?
No, there's men involved, of course. One of the things that we want to make sure is that everybody understands that this is not a female issue. This is a global issue. And in order for equality to be there, we need the support of men as well. So the membership is open to everybody. The events are open to everybody, unless there's a specific topic that requires being gender, a selection of gender.
Love it. I think that's a great point, that in order to create lasting change, you can't just focus on one gender. It takes both genders to understand what the problems are and for both of them to brainstorm different ideas to help change this issue that's been going on for way too long. Now, Mary, I do want to talk about overall in your career. You are a mother.
I feel like I'm doing anything exceptional, honestly. I think I've had lots of opportunities, and what I can say is that I've always said yes to challenges, and I think that's probably one of the things that I feel most proud of. We all have opportunities, and the more you say yes, the more opportunities knock your door, and the more people are calling you with projects, and so I would say I'm not doing anything really special or different or extremely successful. I think what I'm really proud of is really taking the challenges. And when you have an opportunity, saying yes and pursuing it as hard as you can. And just life is just too short to stay in the same place and do the same thing for the whole of your life. And this is how our world has changed. It's a very globalized world today. You can live in different countries. You can have a wonderful career and have a family if you choose to. The beauty is that today women can choose what it is that they want in most of the world. I know that not everybody has choices, but if you have choices, don't wait for things to happen to you. Just go out and make your luck. It's really about deciding what it is that you want for your life and pursuing it as hard as you can.
That's amazing insight. And, you know, Mary, it's been an absolute honor to have you on our show today. And this was a very important conversation to have both for women in tech and men as well. As well as entrepreneurs. And I think that, you know, this was, again, just a great topic. So thank you so much for being a part of our program today.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It was my pleasure.
Great. Now, we do want our listeners to connect with us. The conversation does not have to stop here. You can go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, you can use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, and hashtag weforshe. Now, we'd also like to thank all of you for listening. You've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. This show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.